From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Shrubs, I think of them as the sort of human-sized plants, and they definitely are the backbone of the garden. Ken Drews and I each have a lot of different shrubs, and I asked him the other day, if you could only have three, which ones would they be? Well, that's our topic today, desert island shrubs. But first, this message.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
You all know Ken Drews, old friend, great gardener, and author and photographer of 20 award-winning garden books. He's here again today, this time to try to narrow down our list of must-have shrubs to the real standouts and tell us why. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Margaret.
I know you'll never get it to three.
Well, it's funny you said that, because when we first started talking about it, you said one. And both of us thought, we can't pick one. Can we even pick three? We'll try.
Right. So which of your books? We always give away a copy of one of your books when we talk on the show with the transcript of the show. What do you think? I mean, is this one for Shade Garden, or is this one for, what's this one for? How about Shade Garden?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the new Shade Garden would be
good.
A good one.
That's always a huge hit. So good, 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 good. So we're at, you and I in our lives are at what another expert friend says is the shrub season of our lives, which is sort of, rather than crawling around dealing with lots of fussy high maintenance perennials, it's kind of great to have some big fillers like mature shrubs to do a lot of showing off and yet not ask a lot of us. So where do we begin? What's a shrub, I guess, huh?
Well, a shrub is a multi-stemmed plant, a woody plant. And I guess that sort of describes it. You know, a tree would have one trunk, one stem. Herbaceous plants die down to the ground and have soft tissues. And a shrub is a woody plant that is bushy. A bush, I don't like that word for describing a shrub, but a shrub can be bushy.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay. And we should say before we start naming our desert island shrubs that we didn't include conifers, because really that's a whole other conversation. So many shapes and colors and textures among those. So do you remember your first shrub, and is it still there, and is it a favorite, or it didn't make the list?
Well, I get to pick three, right?
Okay. You want me to tell you my first?
Well, you know, you said conifers, and I'm not going to talk about conifers, but one of my favorite shrubs is evergreen.
Okay.
It's what is called a broadleaf evergreen, and it's a buxus. It's a kind of boxwood. I have too many of them, and it's boxwood sempervirens Graham blandi.
Yes.
And it is one of the most columnar plants I've ever seen, really, but it's a shrub, and it's minor. There's probably, I have some that are like 7 feet tall and 15 inches wide, if you can imagine that.
Yep.
And so they're like punctuation marks, you know, they're like exclamation marks in the garden. And as I said, I have too many, because when I first got, I always wanted them. And then a nursery not too far from here had a whole lot of them, and nobody bought them. And the price kept going lower and lower and lower. I think I have, maybe I may have 20 of them when they were $8 a piece.
Wow. That's a lot of exclamations.
A long time. I know. And I also keep moving them. I just moved three.
Oh boy. Sun? They want sun?
You know, I'm sure they would love sun, but I have all my boxwoods. Well, I don't have any full sun. But I have some of my boxwoods in quite a bit of shade, and they stay columnar.
Okay.
Sometimes I tie them up because the snow might split them a little bit.
Right.
Or, you know, splay them. They don't break.
Right.
But I do tie the ones that are floppy up for the winter. Okay. But I love it. If you can right. picture it, it's just
so
wonderful.
The boxwood called Graham Blandy, columnar. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't actually have any evergreen things at all on my list, whether broadleafed or coniferous. And I was thinking when we started this conversation the other day on the phone that my first shrub passion was the genus Viburnum. And back in the day, we had a lot of Asian viburnums, like the double file and so forth, that turned out to be kind of invasive in a lot of areas of the country. So I don't grow those anymore. But lately, I've been cultivating more and more native ones, like the maple leaf, acerifolium, and dentatum, the arrowwood, and so forth. So that was kind of where my shrub journey began. But the thing I have the most of, you said you have a lot of Graham Blandy, is winterberry holly, speaking of fruited things. And I don't know what came over me. I mean, it was the birds that came over me early on here in this rural place, having been grown up in the city, you know, coming here, meeting all the birds and knowing that, learning that they liked, some of them liked fruit, and that the native hollies were one of the ways to fuel the migration in the winter time. And I planted about 45 or 50 of them in three very large groups in different directions toward the perimeter of the property, but in different directions where I can see them from key windows in the house at a distance in the winter, and all different varieties, and big ones, small ones. I got a lot of fruit. And the birds like me very much. And yeah, so waxwings and robins, I can, you know, hunt flocks of 100 or whatever at a time will come in right around now, November-ish. And again, to pick over it at the first snowfall and so forth. And they'll strip them all pretty early on. But one trick with winterberry hollies, if you want some that will last longer for your visual interest, the non-red varieties, the birds leave them longer. They're not as interested in them. So right, but the yellowish-orange ones and
right,
so
I
forth.
I love those.
The lighter-colored ones.
And the winterberry has really nice bark, too. A lot of people don't limb them up or, you know, cut the bottom branches off, but they have beautiful gray bark, I think.
Yes. So that would be one of mine. What's one of yours?
Well, you know, a long time ago, you told me that birds come for different times of the year for different kinds of fruit. And I guess the winterberry probably is starchy maybe or something.
Because the winterberry is actually high in lipids or oils.
Oh,
so
oils.
It's calorie rich and, you know, very sustaining.
But it's taken kind of late compared to, like, you know, the juicy, sugary fruits.
Correct. Yes.
Well, another one of my favorites has fruit. I don't think the birds are too interested in them, but it's the, used to be called Ponceris, and now it's called Citrus trifoliata. And I have a contorted version called Flying Dragon, and it's beautiful as a shrub, and it's magnificent when it's covered with real oranges, even though I'm in zone 6A, and they're a little bigger than golf balls, and they're fuzzy and kind of gorgeous yellow color, like the sunshine. And it's just a beautiful plant, very easy. When I first got this plant, everything I read about it said it was zone 7 and it wouldn't live. And I saw one on Long Island, and I got some fruits, and I grew one from a seed, because, well, the fruits are not really, I guess they're edible, but you wouldn't want to eat them because they're really sour. And one fruit might have 30 seeds in it. But I've grown one here from seed that I probably had for about 30 years, and I was coddling it indoors. Then I got a flying dragon, and I planted it outside, and it's been down to minus 10 degrees without missing a beat. So now I have two. I have the species I grew from seed probably 30 years ago, and I prune that, and the flying dragon is all wavy and contorted, and it has thorns.
Thorny, yes.
And on the flying dragon, the thorns are hooked. So I always thought when I had the house in Brooklyn, I actually did this, when I had the house in Brooklyn, I grew mine for the summer and the spring outside as a sort of a way to stop burglars.
It's barbed wire. It's Ken's version of botanical barbed wire.
Of course. Well, we try to do that with all plants. Yeah. Double duty.
Yeah. Okay. So I always said Ponceris. I have no idea, but you're saying it's in the genus Citrus now. And the species again is?
Trifoliata. Three
trifoliata.
Left.
Okay. So okay, good. So that's one I've never even tried. one that I have my next, you know, if I have the most winter berries, the thing I have the second most of probably are Aesculus parviflora, the bottle brush buckeye, which is a whopper of a plant, a kind of colonizing, suckering thing, deciduous. And it's a southeastern, these days in modern history, it's southeastern and it's native to the southeast. But before the last glaciers, for all we know, it was up north too, because it's bone hardy, even in the Midwest and Northeast. The bottle brush buckeye, the buckeyes are not, that look like chestnuts, they're poisonous. You don't eat them, but the squirrels will run off with them like mad. And this guy is a whopper, Aesculus parviflora. I have the straight species, which I've had about 30 years and maybe 15 high, and incredible fall color, gorgeous flowers that are like little tiny, many tubular flowers on a wand, on a big wand, kind of a creamy off-white color, with a dark sort of orangey interior. And I've the butterflies love them, the pollinators love them, and I've even had Baltimore orioles, who are nectivorous, they're nectar-seeking birds, drink it, the little flowers, these beautiful, beautiful flowers. Right at the 4th of July it blooms. So it's an interesting shrub, you know, not a spring bloomer, it's a July bloomer, and wildly fantastic yellow fall color. And then I have the later variety, which blooms like 2 weeks later, Rogers strain. So I have sort of an extended season. And now, and I think only Song Sparrow Farm and Nursery in the Midwest, in Chicago area, I think they're the only ones who have this, but from Dawes Arboretum in Ohio, there's a dwarf called Dawes Dwarf for people who don't have a big garden. So that would be probably my most, and I'm looking out the window right now at blaze of yellows.
It's like bigger than a school bus.
Talking about like a big circle. It forms like a hummock, like a mound, like a giant 15-foot giant. I just adore them. So, and it'll grow in the shade. And again, yeah.
Well, you really need space for that guy. I think the flowers are fragrant too, aren't they?
Yes, they're a little bit sweet. I don't notice the fragrance from a distance, but as I said, the insects really love it. The skippers, the butterflies called skippers, they love it especially. So it's quite the attraction for me and for the wildlife. So what's your next desert island shrub?
Well, my next desert island shrub is also native to the southeast. And I don't know, I imagine you could grow it. I don't know exactly the limit of hardiness for hydrangea cordifolia, the oak leaf hydrangea. I love those plants. And some years they have magnificent fall colors. Some years not as good. Some years they're sort of reddish. But some years they're burgundy, incredible. But I don't grow it for the foliage color, even though it's great. I grow it for the flowers. Mm. And there's one that's very popular that has too many flowers. I think of it sort of as the Barbara Streisand of oak leaf hydrangeas, because it's zoftic, if you know what that is. But I like the one called Snowflake, which has, I guess you'd say they're double. They're sort of hose and hose. So it has a flower and then a flower in the center of the flower and a flower in the center of that flower. So that it keeps going. Then the flowers turn pink on these huge panicles and then green. And when they're green and ripe, you can cut them and bring them inside. They'll turn brown and they'll last as long as you can tolerate the dust on the mantle, and then just pick new ones and put them there. But it's really beautiful. And I know we're going to have at least one photograph of our favorite shrubs on the website. But that's a favorite. And it's also, it's really easy to layer, to ground layer.
So to make a new shrub by bruising a branch and laying it down on the soil? You mean?
Right. And I cover it with a rock usually.
So it holds the little knife cut, so to speak, the little peel in the bark is in the soil, held next to the soil, and it'll root.
And then you just forget it for about 12 months, and then dig it up and give it to a friend.
I'm very good at forgetting things. Is that an advantage in this propagation thing?
Such an advantage. You can't imagine. Otherwise, you're standing there tapping your foot, waiting 12 months.
You said two things about that oak leaf hydrangea snowflake. You said hose in hose, which makes me think, if people don't know what that is, it's almost like there's two flowers, one slightly smaller, tucked inside each other, like mm-hmm. a cup with a smaller cup in it. And you hear that a lot of times if people want to look it up and see examples. Primulas, there's some great old style primulas, primroses that are hose in hose, which I adored years ago. The other thing is you said dusty with dried flower arrangements, like on the mantelpiece. and you terrible housekeeper, you know. So my friend Jenny, the flower farmer of Tiny Hearts Farm near me, she says that you just put your on low and on cool your hair dryer, take it outside and just hair dry them. And she said it's fabulous. It cleans them off completely.
I FYI. Clean with, sometimes with canned air or yeah. even a straw. but, you know, you, really, after a year, just pick new ones, right?
Yeah. But all I'm saying is if it's looking a little funky by January or February and you want to keep it longer. So.
Well, we pick so many of the hydrangea arborescens, too. They're so beautiful.
Yeah. So I wanted to put in a plug for shrubby or twig willows and dogwoods, the genus Salix and the genus Cornus. Well, some of them have been changed. The Cornus have been changed to another genus probably, but whatever. I think dogwood is Cornus. My favorite willow is the rosemary willow, Salix eleognos, and it has like linear blue-gray. They're almost like giant needles. They look like giant needles of a conifer, of a blue conifer, but they're not needles. It's deciduous. And I got this as a little rooted cutting probably 30 years ago. And even when super expert people come to garden tours here, they ask me what this thing is because no one's ever seen it grown into almost a tree size. It's like a small tree at this point because it's so old and I've never cut it back. With the twig willows and twig dogwoods, usually we cut them back every couple or few years to enjoy the twig color if they have colorful twigs. And this one doesn't really have that quality. It's more for the foliage in the warm season that we grow it. So Salix eleognos, I couldn't live without that one. I just adore it. And the twig dogwoods in the winter, you know, I'm in a cold winter, a long winter area, and boy, the red and the gold twigs are just such a treat. My favorites are probably the Cornus, the dogwoods, Cornus cerisea, sunshine with the yellow leaves in the spring, and the variegated gold twig one called silver and gold. I can't imagine. I have lots and lots and lots of twig dogwoods and twig willows all around, especially in some of the looser, wilder places. And the ones that are the best wildlife value, those are native things, all of those. Are the ones with the plain green leaves, not the variegated or the gold or the purple leaves, because the insects can't use them as a host plant as effectively. So, you know, if you're going to, I mean, I have the showy one, like onesies of the showy ones right near the house, the variegated one and so forth, and the gold leaf one. But in the outer areas, I have multiples of the plain green leaf one, which a lot of insect interaction, so, and bird interaction. White fruits, those have the twig dogwoods.
Yeah, we've been talking about things that got their names changed, and that Salix used to be, I think, Rosmarinifolia.
And it may still be for all Margaret knows, because she
keep up. You're right, because that one, I thought, why change that name? It was the perfect name.
I know, it looks like foliage. Rosemary. Right, exactly.
But so now, you know, we tried to leave it to three, and now you made me think of the Arctic willow, Salix purpurea nana.
It's a great plant too.
Oh yes. My gosh, is that a great plant with bluish foliage? Yeah. And I do cut that back every spring, and it just makes a lovely mound.
Yeah.
Similar in a way to the rosemary willow, only the leaves are much smaller.
Much more diminutive, yes.
And it's good. So useful as a shrub. Yeah. And also deciduous. Wow. You got a favorite lilac? I don't know how much time we have.
Well, we have a couple more minutes, but and you know, lilacs, they're one season plants, 2 week plants, right? I mean, don't put them by your front walk. I love, and I don't know how to pronounce it. It was named for a battlefield, World War battlefield in France. Agincourt Beauty, Agincourt Beauty. I love that one. It is a beauty. Dark purple is a favorite. What about you?
President Lincoln,
even though it's also, right,
it's I think it's the bluest.
Oh, blue. Okay.
The lilacs.
Oh, okay.
And unfortunately, it's lanky, like its namesake. So it's kind of tall. I have it planted by a second story window because it's very tall and skinny. And if you want to pick the flowers, you have to lean out the window or get a ladder because they're at the top. But they're, of course, they're all great cut. And I wish they lasted longer, like 12 months would be nice.
That would be nice.
The smell is great. I think it's a little early. And these are Syringa vulgaris, right? This is the...
Yes, those two are. Yeah. I also have the Hyacintha floris, which are really, really nice and more mounded kind of shrubs. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the white ones and so forth. So, so in the last couple few minutes, tell us, do you have a real oddball to share? Because you do have a lot of... Unique is an overused word, but you have a lot of unique plants.
I do have a lot of unique plants, and I can't think of an oddball now because I've already named a couple.
I know one of yours that I'm always fascinated to see.
What?
That ginkgo, that strange ginkgo.
Oh, that is odd.
So tell us, because that's a shrub, but a ginkgo, I think, is a tree, and yours is not a tree.
And ginkgos are very easy to prune, and I have to admit I do prune it, but it has multi-stems. And it's called Todd's Broom. If you look online, you'll see a lot of sort of dwarf ginkgos that actually have started this way. A broom is a mutation that appears on another plant, and then they can propagate it, and it keeps the characteristics of the mutation. In this case, kind of tubular leaves, and it's very stocky. But I do prune it, you know, keep it in bounds. But it's shrub-like. It's stocky. It's about, I'd say, 6 feet across and 5 feet tall. And it has wonderful yellow fall color that's just coming on now. Interestingly enough, 2 weeks later than my regular ginkgos.
Oh. So,
that is a weird one. But you were asking me these questions, and I thought of my favorite rose. A rose is a shrub, too. Just wanted to point that out.
Yes. And mine is the blue-leafed rose, rubrifolia, whatever we want to call it. Yeah. What's yours?
I have a very old rose, and it took me a long time to find out what it was because I didn't know. And it's called Petite de Hollande. It's an old, very old rose, the kind that was used in perfume, but it has a small flower, and the fragrance is beyond description. Lovely little pink flowers, just once a year. It's pest-free and disease-free. It's from actually from the 1700s. So
wow.
It's a very old rose. I think that a couple of those great old rose, heirloom rose sellers have it. I know that Austin Roses sells it in Great Britain, which doesn't do us much good. But it's just a wonderful plant, and I propagated it. And now I have it in two places because if I lost it, I'd be heartbroken.
Right. Petite Hollande or something. Okay.
Right, exactly.
So I'm thinking that, you know, obviously we could go on and on and on, and I'm afraid to even go outside today and see all the shrubs I didn't shout out, and they're going to yell at me.
We ran out of time. You know.
Yeah. But let's do Desert Island fill in the blank, you know, like let's do Desert Island trees 1 month, and let's do Island, you know, perennial. Seriously, because I'm learning about some new things from you, and that would be fun. So... Yeah. What do you think?
Well, and I think that's great. I think maybe we shouldn't talk about the number. We should just talk about them until we run out of time.
I had to try to restrain us in advance, even though I knew it would
You're
be.
Right. Well, we started with what's your favorite, and then it went to what's your three favorites.
I know. All right. Well, thank you.
I love you all.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @AwayToGarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.